Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. At Beth Emmanuel, we are proclaiming the vital gospel message of the coming kingdom of heaven. If you share our passion for this message, please support this teaching ministry and messianic community with your prayers and financial contributions. To learn how, click on the donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
Okay, for those who have never heard my story before, I am going to tell it. And for those who have heard it, I just hope you'll bear with me. So it's some of the older ones here know my story, so it's a repeat for them. But when I was about 10 years old, I would go to summer camp. And at the summer camp, there were missionaries from Africa. And I loved the music. I loved the stories. And I began to feel my desire to go to Africa. And of course, at these meetings, they would invite anyone who wanted to dedicate their life to Hashem to come forward and give their life to Him. And I would do that at this camp meeting. And following that camp, I went to another camp where my father was the director. And again, in the evening service, they gave us the invitation to give our lives to Hashem. And I went forward where my father was. I was there with my older sister, and my father came, and I always get tears right now, wrapped his arms around my sister and me and cried and blessed us and affirmed our decision to serve Hashem. And it reminds me of Torah, where the father can either approve or disapprove a child's vow to God. And I feel like with his approval, that is why this desire to go remained with me. And so in 2000, I decided it was time. I was getting older. Most of my children had left home, and the house was empty. And so I called my children, and I said, you know, I think I'm going to sell the house, and I'm going to go to Africa. Sudan was where I wanted to go. And my oldest daughter said, Mom, that's what you said you were always going to do. I don't remember that. But she did. And I called my father. Immediately he said, you go. I don't want to stop you. You have my blessing. So that's one of the reasons that I had could follow the vision to go. I told somebody this once when they said to me, they said, Emily, I've always wanted to be a missionary. And I said, it's not hard. Sell your house, quit your job, and go. She never said that to me again. That was the end. And you know, when you quit your job, you lose your health care. You lose a lot of security, but you know you're in God's hands. And He becomes your security. But as I was getting ready to go, there was a couple that was messianic that we had known for many years, and we saw such a change in their lives. I'm sorry, I'm saying we, because after I sold my home, I went and lived with Leah until everything was ready and organized. And so we started to meet and study and hear about the festivals. I even came down to the Twin Cities for a Shavuot conference through Seed of Abraham, I believe, and bought materials to take with me because I was leaving soon after the conference. So I took those materials with me, and I had been going to a church where there was a missionary who would come from Sudan. So I asked him if I can join his ministry. He has written in his newsletters that he's making a mobile clinic, and he approved me coming. He announced my coming to work with him in this mobile clinic in Sudan. I was a nurse. And so I go up there. He calls me the first week. He calls me in the office, and he tells me This wasn't my idea to start a mobile clinic. I don't have money for it. All I have is a vehicle, so I don't need you. So I go back to, you know, praying, oh God, what am I going to do? Oh God, all day long, oh God. So with another missionary, I visited Uganda into the capital city of Kampala. We stayed at the Finnish missionary compound. And I asked the house girl, who was a wonderful young lady, can I go to church with you? Up to this point, I had not been to an indigenous African church. When I was in Sudan, we just met right at the Bible school in the compound. And so I went. And I met the pastor and his wife, found out that they had a school during the week right in the church, that they had children from the slum. And yes, they would love if I would come work with them. I also have a degree in elementary education. So I can use water. I met with him that week, and he gave me a tour of the slum where the children come from. And some of the students, when it would rain, the sewer would all run into their house, and it would be knee-high. And the crowded, filthy, open sewer conditions, as we walked through it for about 2 hours, I literally thought I was going to pass out. And I was just praying, oh God, I'm going to pass out. I can't take this. And he decided we would leave. And so God is good. He watches over you very carefully. When you step out in his will and you're in his will, the protection is awesome. I can't tell you all the stories, but... So in the school, I was to teach the seventh graders who didn't have a teacher, and it was only 3 students. Plus, in the morning, I would take a little bag of antibacterial medicine, wound cleanser, and bandages. And sometimes, in the beginning especially, I could spend the whole morning cleaning up horribly infected wounds. One girl even had a wound that I just couldn't, it wouldn't heal and it wouldn't heal. And finally, we noticed something coming out of it, and it was literally a piece of bone coming out of her flesh. As I did this for about a month or two, the wounds improved, and of course now they would come to me immediately when it was still fresh and not infected. And pretty soon, I only had maybe 1 or 2 in the morning, the new wounds. And so that got a lot better. And I continued to do that in Tororo later on. but I did keep telling the pastor, I'm only here for a year, and then I'm going to the villages. I want to go to the villages. Most of the missionaries stay in Kampala, where there's medical care, conveniences, running water, some electric. I won't say clean water, because a week and a half before I left to come here, I drank some of the water out of the faucet, and I came down with typhoid quite badly. And so we've had 2 of the boys there also came down with typhoid about that same time. So it's running, it may not be clean. But while I was there, pastors would come to visit, and they would stay at my place. And one of the pastors, I'm going to call him Pastor George, came from Tororo. And he was actually related to the assistant pastor there at the church. And so I asked him, can I come visit Tororo? I would love to get out in the villages. The minute I visited Tororo, I fell in love with it. The countryside is beautiful. Tororo Rock is majestic. But I think part of it is the city, Kampala, is so noisy, so dirty, so wild. You know, 6 in the morning, your house is right near the street. The taxis go by honking their horns. At night, the dogs are howling. So I think I love Tororo just because I was out of Kampala. But anyway... moved there, I gave all the children a choice. Did they want to come with me or not? And Maureen does have parents, very, very poor, and very, very Catholic. And she said, "Aunt Emily, if I stay here, my parents won't let me go to church." And she talked to her parents, and they gladly approved her coming with me. So that was no problem. So we rented a house. Now, one of the Jewish principles is that you should buy a home. It's an important thing in life. So I knew while I still had money from selling my house that I needed to purchase a home. So we bought land right where I wanted, right at the base of Tororo Rock. Now, that sounds good. Oops, sorry. But there's a saying in Tororo, be careful, because you can buy air. And I know people, I just know a pastor, just happened to, sold his land, moved, bought land, and lost everything because he bought air. It was, so Pastor George and his church, I'm working with them. You have to have an organization to work with, because I have to have a permit to work there. So at the same time, I'm working on getting a work permit so I can remain. Plus, he had a group of men who were businessmen right in town, and they said, "We'll find you land." In fact, they said, "There's a man that works with us who owns a piece of land right here by Tororo Rock." And so we met. I liked the spot. Wrote up a legal document. I gave him the money he asked for. No papers. Nothing. So I started going into the office, and I would sit there half the day. Nobody would come into the office. Of course, they didn't want to see me. They knew why I was there. We went to his home. Me and some of the people from the house sat. He never came home. You could not get him. Finally, had a meeting, and he increased the price. So I agreed, and still, no papers. So we had another meeting. He increased the price. I agreed. Well, by this time, I kind of figure out what's happening, and I heard someone say behind my back what the land was really worth. And so now I know what the land is worth, and really I had given him over half. So the third meeting, I knew my price, and I said, "Here's the price, I'll give you no more, that is it." And that was it, but no papers. So they said to me, "You're a Mzungu, white person. If you go there to visit, ask Derry, you're Mzungu. Swahili." And they said, "They'll charge you too much and they may not do the paperwork right. You let us do it." So they even brought me a paper to show me they were working on the papers. Later on, as I looked at that paper, much later, a year later or so, it had my name on it, but it did not have a stamp from the land office. So we started building. We built the house. So I figured 2 years is enough time. I went into their office and I said, "I am finished trying to work with you. I am now going to do it by legal means to get my papers." And I walked out. Well, they didn't like that. They talked about me for a long time. But I had started to plan to put in the foundation for this storied building, and I had a new contractor. And he knew my story, and he said, "Emily, I'm friends with the land office, with the man who is the head of it. I think we can get him to do it." And we did. Again, it cost me money. Well, when he went to look for the papers, there were no papers. He had to start from scratch and create legal papers for this piece of land. 2 years later, I finally get my papers. the house. It's very small. You can see it on the... I kind of skipped. If you go to the second page in the middle, you can see my house. It's about 1,000 square feet. And you walk in, small little sitting room. Everything is cement. The floor, the walls, the ceiling. So when the price of cement goes up, the cost of building goes up. In the back of the sitting room is like our laundry room and our mud room. And that's where we do all our paperwork for running the organization. That's where the washing machine is. That's where we store all our some of our sugar and our oil, because you can't keep those things out in the front because they will be stolen. And we were finding these items missing. So anything you don't want stolen goes back in that room. To the left are two bedrooms, a toilet and a shower. To the right, two bedrooms, toilet and a shower. And then off to the corner is a kitchen. Kitchen's very small, one large cabinet. I'm going to lose my voice. Oh. A gas stove with the gas tank sitting right there, and a sink. And most of the time, kitchens there are just for storing your saucepans, your charcoal stove, even keeping your charcoal there, because that's what you cook with most of the time. I like my house. I'm very comfortable there. It's very handy. I like the layout. Needs a little repair. We need to, some of the walls are, the cement's crumbling from moisture, needs painting. Just a few things, but basically it has been a very good, solid house. In the front is what we call the veranda. You can see it there. And off to the side, going out of the kitchen, is another veranda. Where, basically in Africa, the houses are small. People there think I have a big house. And the rooms are dingy. And they don't paint much. They're dirty. And so you live outside. I wanted to tell the children that living where I live is like camping all the time. It's dirty, and in the front is dirt, although the contractor has told me I need to lay cement in the front. We're having erosion. He told me that just before I left. Okay, you say, what's my day like? Well, we have two guards. So you ask, why do you have guards? Because one of the biggest problems, thieves. And there, it's not wrong to steal. Only getting caught's wrong. So parents expect, our families expect, the people who come to my home to steal something and bring it home back to them. It's expected. And that's why we keep the sugar in the mud room. You can tell that's a much wanted commodity. Tea and sugar. I rented for 1 year as we built the house. And one trip, just coming back from America, came home that evening, late in the evening, and you know, you stay up and you pray and you talk. And about midnight, we heard the dog. And the children said, Aunt Emily, there's thieves. So I said to Maureen, you call the police, because she can speak their language. And I got out the tambourines, and I don't know if I had shofars. I might have. And I said, children, make noise. And so we banged on tambourines. We shouted. Things got quiet about 1, close to 2. We thought we were going to go to bed. And I said, where are the police? Didn't you call them? No, she said, they don't have any transport. They said we should come to them. We're about 2 miles away. So we knew there would be no police. And pretty soon the dog got upset again. And we shouted, banged the tambourines till 4 a.m. And that's when I decided I got to have a guard at night. I can't take this. So we hired a guard. Yeah, there was a guard service, but many times they would come drunk, wouldn't come at all. One time he left the gun in front of the house and he went out back to the boys' quarters and watched videos. So I'm stepping over the gun. I don't know how to use it. AK-47. It's all they have. Everybody has. AK-47. It's an awesome gun. So I get up at 5 or 6 in the morning and I ask the askari. That was the word I wanted to write. The guard there is called askari. So I ask them, how was your night? Get a report. Now, the guards I have right now, I've hired myself, and they have bow and arrows. They don't have a gun. It's hard to get a gun there. In fact, it's illegal for the Ugandans to have guns. But these have them. Now, when you have a guard, you also feed him supper. So when we first got our guard, I was taking a bowl of food out to the askari, and I don't see him, so I start calling. Now there's another word that is, I think, Swahili too, and you call sugar sukari. So I take this bowl of food out, and I'm walking, and instead of calling askari, askari, I'm going, sukari, 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 sugar, sugar. The children were laughing inside. The school children go to school by 7:30, between 6 and 7:30. 8 o'clock, the rest of the children must be up. We go and say prayers in the synagogue. There's a picture, I believe, if you look, of the boys in the synagogue saying prayers. I thought we had it. Yes?
Yeah.
Right below the house. I didn't tell you about it. Yeah. 8 o'clock we do prayers. We have breakfast. Tea is very important to Ugandans. And so you always have tea. And in the morning we would have maybe once in a while a loaf of bread with peanut paste or peanut butter. We would have samosas, which the women cook, sell it on the street, just flour and water, dough, and something like lentil beans in it, and they fry it. Very good. I love it. It's very good. Chapatis, you know, Indian. You roll it, you fry it. That's eaten here, I think, even. And then 9 o'clock, Monday through Thursday, is Torah reading. People ask me, how do you teach Torah? Everyone in the community knows that we have Torah reading at 9 o'clock and that they are invited to come and enjoy. And sometimes the pastors will come. People will stop in. And we read the portion reading for the week. And of course on Fridays we is preparing for Sabbath. Now next week I'm going to tell you about Sabbath. And I'm going to tell you about the congregations that have joined us. It's very exciting. Probably the most exciting thing that's happening. Just like here, we see people hearing about us and coming. Well, that's what's happening there. One of the men that is the leader said, Emily, it's moving like fire, he said, this is. So I'll tell you about that next week. By this time, the house mother has come, and before I dismiss the boys, we have discussed what's for lunch. No refrigerators on. We just put the refrigerator on for Sabbath so we can have cold passion juice. And so we talk about what we're going to do for the day, what everybody needs to do. And the house mother is there a lot of times for the Torah reading. She has a little girl, Skulu. And one of the first things Skulu wants is breakfast. Don't deny Skulu her breakfast. Now, one of the reasons is that they eat their lunch at my house. She told me when they go home in the evening, they do not have supper. She said the little food they have goes to the school children. She has about 6, 7 other children. And that food is for the children who didn't have lunch during the school day. So they come to my house quite hungry. And I'll never forget a story of Marines. One time she was talking with a man about Hashem and what he had done for her. And he was kind of giving her a hard time and making fun of her. And she said, I'll tell you one thing, she said. When I go to bed at night hungry, I have someone to pray to. All the children in my home have known hunger. They have known abandonment. They have known death. They've all lost somebody. And they have come from very difficult situations. So I consider every child in my home a success story. Some of the other foods might be grasshoppers, white ants. Tell you a story. The white ants come at a certain time. And when they come, if there's a window open, they go for the light. So they can just come all over the house. I didn't know it. One night I went to bed, and 3 of the children stayed up, and they ate white ants. They just grab them, pull the wings off, and eat them. And then, you know, I began to teach Torah, and you understand this is not kosher food. They shouldn't be doing it. So the next time it happened, it comes to me, oh, I better warn the children, no eating white ants. So I shout out of my bedroom door, nobody eat white ants. And one of the girls replied, but they're so good. I hope they didn't eat them. We eat a lot of beans, probably 4 times a week. It's protein. The boys love it. And we get beef, kind of like a stew beef, Friday night for Shabbat. Now, during the week, I try to have one other main protein meal. It's either eggs or liver. And otherwise, it's beans the rest of the week. Eaten with kind of a thick, like hot cereal, but so thick you can pick it up with your fingers. Made out of corn maize. And they eat with their fingers quite a bit. And you take the maize and you scoop up the meat or the beans, vegetables, which could be a lot of greens, cabbage, sesquuma wheat, which is collard greens. There's a local green that's kind of like, it's smaller than spinach, but just a little tougher. And we cook that and we put it in peanut butter sauce. Delicious. My favorite. Love it. We have learned to use a pressure cooker. It really is great. Saves time. We serve between 15 to 20 people at lunchtime. And that's why I need a house mother. The children have to come home from school, and I just couldn't do everything anymore. And if I don't lose my voice, I'll tell you the story about her. Oops. Time. Must I tell you how we got a house mother? I was coming home, and I prayed to God. I said, God, I need a woman to come into this home and help these children when I'm gone. Most of the older ones are boys. You know what boys are like. They'll eat beans every night, and they won't cook till 11 o'clock at night. So one Sabbath, a young boy came to our house and begged for help. The boys went and checked it out. I always send the boys because culture is one of the most difficult things to deal with because they could easily fool me, lie to me, deceive me, and I wouldn't understand. But they understand. They know when somebody is playing games. So they go check it. They went on Sunday. These children had porridge or hot cereal. Friday morning, there was 4 of them. It's now Sunday afternoon. They've had no food. The younger children are laying on the mats weak. They're in a house that's made out of mud with a steel roof, tin roof, that could blow over anytime there's a storm. And they came back and said, we got to help these people. The mother wasn't there. The boy, oldest boy, was like ninth grade. After school, he would go look for labor jobs to try to get money for food, while the girls would go and fetch wood, hoping they had food to cook. And we decided we had to help them. No mother, she had left to go to the village, didn't come back. And I think we helped for a week or two. And I told the children, when your mother comes, you tell me. So she came and they brought her to the house. Now remember my prayer. I need a good house mother. I looked at her and I don't use these words, God spoke to me, but something, you know, spoke to me and said to me, this is your house mother. And we've had her for a number of years. The children love Torah. Friday nights when we cook for Sabbath, we let her take food home so they can have a Sabbath meal. So we're always feeding over 20 people every Sabbath, including her family, too. Or they wouldn't have Sabbath. Or have a meal. They'd have Sabbath. when should I stop? 10 minutes? Okay. Everything there is cooked with tomatoes and onions. So Friday morning, chopped up carrots, green peppers, anybody available. The boys would go shopping for our Sabbath food. And me and whoever was available would chop up vegetables. By noon, we'd have the vegetables chopped to cook with, and I would have blisters on my fingers. So I just thank God this last time I bought a food processor. Oh, it has saved us lots and lots of work. And if we know the power's on and the tomatoes and onions, I tell the boys, bring the tomatoes first, bring the onions first, electric's on. And we can and we quickly use it while the power is there. Well, by this time, I'm with BI. You wonder, how did you get with BI? Well, for about 4 years, on and off, into our own back visiting, I'd collect material, I'd collect books. And one time I was here, and a friend up north ordered me one full year of Messiah magazine. And I took it back with me, and I read and I read. And there was a writer named Daniel Lancaster, and I loved his teaching. And I came back and I said to my daughter, I said, I'm going to go to that congregation, and I am going to be their missionary. And she said, inside, she never told me this, but she said, inside, I went, ha, 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 they don't know you, and you're going to just walk in, and you're going to be their missionary. Ha, ha, ha. So anyway, there were people in Brainerd who had come to BI and visited and were familiar with everybody here. So I came, and BI let me present. And a couple weeks later, they called and said, would you be our missionary? I should have went, ha, ha, ha. And it's been wonderful. And whenever I ask anybody, what should I say? They say, greet everybody there and tell them thank you. I guess I'm about halfway through. I have 6 pages. I'm on page 3. But we'll... This is why Daniel gave me 2 weeks. He knew this would happen. I would never get finished. I wanted to tell about the children. But there was a man that visited us one day. And, you know, you have teenagers in your house and young children. And, you know, you're busy feeding them. And this man kept saying to me, these children will become leaders. And he didn't say once. He said, these children will become leaders, as he sat there. And that has been what God has done with the children from my home. But I give credit to Torah. This is how you teach integrity into children who have grown up in pagan cultures. My children came, some of five of them, off the street. They had watched the Jesus film that was showed in town, or they'd go to the Crusades, but no idea how it was to even live in a family or what it was like to listen and be obedient to your parent. So I have to work at teaching them how to honor a parent, how to be obedient. It's been a big job. And I should tell you one story and then I'll stop. I want to tell you about Taula. He is a total orphan. Okay? If you look at the map downstairs, you'll see Palisa. He came to Tororo from... Do I have a map in the handout? That's Taula on the back page, the young man. He is now the administrator. He's basically in Tororo running everything while I'm here. His father was a poor peasant, had three wives, left 11 children when all three wives and the mother and the father all died. This is a good sign of AIDS, HIV AIDS, and I would hope to talk about that next week, but there's 2.5 million orphans in Uganda, 1.5 million are because of AIDS, but they won't tell you that. It's, you know, if somebody dies, it's somebody's fault. That's their pagan idea. And so if you know why that person died, then it's your fault they died, right? So anyway, so they won't, none of the children will say, my parents died of AIDS, but I can pretty much figure it out. Number one, if all the parents have died, or if some of the younger little children died, they probably died of AIDS. So he comes from Palisade. He came to Tororo with an uncle who disappeared. And he was on the streets begging for help. And Taula begged everybody. Everybody in town knows about Taula because he begged from them. One day, the doctor called me up that the clinic we use, and he said, Emily, can't you help this boy? My house is full. Trying to think, I might have had somebody sleeping on the table even. Nowhere to put him. He said, I'll let him sleep in my clinic. Is there anything you can do for him? So I think you all got the idea. So you know what I said I would do. He can come and eat at my house. Well, you know what happens when somebody comes and eats at Auntie Emily's house? They become her children. So at that time, a lady from Denmark, he begged everybody, had paid for his schooling. And he was going to school, and I was feeding him. I bought him a mattress and a mosquito net to sleep in. But eventually that didn't work out, and he was back on the street. And I could see he was hungry. He didn't have school fees. And I just said, you can come into my home. Now, as I move around Tororo, people will stop me and they will say, thank you for helping this boy. He's turned out to be a very wonderful young man who just, people love him. He's got the personality to visit with everybody. Nobody wants to go into town with him to buy anything. It will take too long because he has to stop and talk to everybody. And he went to boarding school for 2 years and immediately was made the student leader. So one day he's in class and the students come to him and they report to him that there's a boy in the dorm having seizures and that they had reported it to the faculty. Nobody would do anything. Now, when you have malaria, the last stage before you die is usually seizures. I've seen them die from malaria. And so he went and checked, and the boy was having seizures. So he went back outside, and he saw the headmaster standing next to his car. And he grabbed the keys from the guard, opened up the door to the little shack they have for the guard, and he took out the canvas gurney. They ran and got the boy out of the dorm, carried him, laid the boy down at the feet of the headmaster of the school, and he said to him, "You can take him alive to the hospital, or you can take a dead body to the village and take him for burial." And he saved the boy's life. The boy is alive today. And so, you know, if that's all and the only reason that I ever went to Uganda was to help Togula, that would be enough. So thank you, people. I guess next week we'll finish.